Chapter 18. The ability of a bullfighter with the muleta is what in the end determines his ranking in the profession, for it is the most difficult of all the phases of modern bullfighting to dominate, and is the part of the bullfight where the genius of a matador has greatest latitude for expression. It is with the muleta that a reputation is made, and it is by the extent of this ability to give a complete imaginative, artistic, and emotional performance with the muleta, granted that he has a good bull, that a bullfighter is paid much or little. To draw a brave bull in Madrid, have him come in ideal condition to the final act, and then through a limited repertoire not be able to take advantage of his bravery and nobility to make a brilliant faena, finishes a bullfighter's chance of a successful career. For bullfighters are now categorized, classed, and paid, strangely enough, not by what they actually do, for the bull may upset their performance, they themselves may be ill, they may not be altogether recovered from a horn wound, or they may simply have off days, but by what they are capable of doing under most favorable conditions. If the spectators know the matador is capable of executing a complete consecutive series of passes with the muleta, in which there will be valor, art, understanding, and above all, beauty and great emotion, they will put up with mediocre work, cowardly work, disastrous work, because they have the hope, sooner or later, of seeing the complete faena. The faena that takes a man out of himself and makes him feel immortal while it is proceeding. That gives him an ecstasy that is, while momentary, as profound as any religious ecstasy, moving all the people in the ring together and increasing in emotional intensity as it proceeds, carrying the bullfighter with it, he playing on the crowd through the bull and being moved as it responds in a growing ecstasy of ordered, formal, passionate, increasing disregard for death that leaves you when it is over and the death administered to the animal that has made it possible as empty, as changed, and as sad as any major emotion will leave you. A bullfighter who can do a great faena is at the top of his profession as long as he is believed capable of still doing it if the conditions are favorable. But a bullfighter who has shown his inability to do a great faena with the conditions right, who is lacking in artistry and genius with the muleta, even though he be brave, honorable, skillful, and not lacking in knowledge of his work, will always be one of the day laborers of bullfighting and paid accordingly. It is impossible to believe the emotional and spiritual intensity and pure classic beauty that can be produced by a man, an animal, and a piece of scarlet serge draped over a stick. If you do not choose to believe it possible and want to regard it all as nonsense, you may be able to prove you are right by going to a bullfight in which nothing magical occurs. And there are many of them. Enough always so you will be able to prove it to your own satisfaction. But if you should ever see the real thing, you would know it. It is an experience that either you will have in your life or you will never have. However, there is no way you can be sure you will ever see a great faena in bullfighting unless you go to many bullfights. But if you ever do see one finished by a great estocada, you will know it. And there will be many things you will forget before it will be gone. Technically, the muleta is used to defend the man from the charge of the bull, to regulate the carriage of the bull's head, to correct a tendency he may have to hook to one side or the other, to tire him and place him in position for killing, and in killing, to furnish an object for him to charge in place of the man's body as the matador goes in on him with the sword. The muleta is in principle held in the left hand and the sword in the right, and passes made with the muleta in the left hand are of greater merit than those made with it in the right, since when it is held in the right hand, or in both hands, it is spread wide by the sword, and the bull, having a larger lure to charge, may pass farther from the man's body, and also by the swing of the larger lure be sent away to a greater distance before recharging, thus allowing the man more time to prepare his next pass. The greatest pass with the muleta, the most dangerous to make and the most beautiful to see, is the natural. In this, the man faces the bull with the muleta held in his left hand, the sword in his right, the left arm hanging naturally at his side, the scarlet cloth dropping in a fold over the stick that supports it and which the man holds as you see in the picture. The man walks toward the bull and sights him with the muleta, and as he charges, the man simply sways with the charge, swinging his left arm ahead of the bull's horns, the man's body following the curve of the charge, the bull's horns opposite his body, the man's feet still. He slowly swings his arm, holding the cloth ahead of the bull, and pivots, making a turn of a quarter circle with the bull. If the bull stops, the man may sight him again and describe another quarter of a circle with him, and again, and again, and again. I have seen it done 6 successive times, the man seeming to hold the bull with the muleta as though by magic. If the bull, instead of stopping with the charge, and what stops him is a final flick the man gives the lowest end of the cloth at the end of each pass, and the great twist that has been given his spinal column through the curve the matador has forced him to describe in bending him around, turns and recharges, the man may get rid of him by a pase de pecho, or pass past the chest. This is the reverse of the pas natural. Instead of the bull coming from in front and the man moving the muleta slowly before his charge, in the pase de pecho, the bull, having turned, comes from behind or from the side, and the man swings the muleta forward, lets the bull go past the man's chest, and sends him away with the sweep of the folds of scarlet cloth. The chest pass is the most impressive when it completes a series of naturales, or when it is forced by an unexpected return and charge of the bull and is used by the man to save himself rather than as a planned maneuver. The ability to execute a series of naturales and then to finish them off with the chest pass mark a real bullfighter. First, it takes courage to sight the bull for a true natural when there are so many other passes in which the bullfighter exposes himself less. It takes serenity to await the arrival of the bull with the unspread muleta low in the left hand, knowing that if he does not take the small lure offered, he will take the man. Then it takes great ability to move the muleta ahead of his charge, keeping him well centered in it, the elbow straight as the arm moves, swinging straight, and to follow the curve with the body without moving the location of the feet. It is a difficult pass to make properly 4 times in succession before a mirror in a drawing room without any bull being present, and if you make it 7 times, you will be dizzy enough. There are many bullfighters who never learn to make it presentably at all. To do it well, without contortion, keeping the lines of the figure with the horn of the bull so close to the man's waist that they would only have to move up an inch or two to gore, controlling the bull's charge by the movement of arm and wrist, and keeping him centered in the cloth, stopping him with the wrist flick at just the proper moment, repeating this 3 or 4 or 5 times takes a bullfighter and an artist. The natural can be tricked by doing it with the right hand, the muleta spread wide with the sword and the man gyrating on his feet so that the bull follows a sort of half spin made by man and muleta rather than a slowly moved arm and wrist. There are many passes made with the right hand that are of positive merit, but in almost all, the sword with its point pricked into the cloth and the hilt held in the same hand with the stick enlarges the spread of the muleta and by giving it greater extent enables the bullfighter to pass the bull farther from his body if he wishes. He may pass him close, but he has a means of passing him farther away in case of necessity that the man working with the muleta in his left hand does not possess. Aside from the natural and the pecho, the principal passes with the muleta are the ayudados, passes made with the sword pricked into the muleta and the two held in both hands. These passes are either called por alto or por bajo, depending on whether the muleta passes over the bull's horns or is swung below the bull's muzzle. All passes and half passes, that is, those in which the bull does not completely pass the man, made with the muleta, have a definite purpose. Nothing so punishes a bull that is strong and willing to charge as a series of naturales in which, at the same time that they are twisting and tiring him, make him follow the lure and the man with his left horn, training him to take the direction the man wants him to take as he later goes in to kill. A bull whose neck muscles have not been sufficiently tired and who carries his head high will, after a series of ayudados por alto, passes made with the muleta and sword held in both hands, and the muleta held high so that the bull drives up after it as he goes by the man, have his muscles tired so the head will be much lower. If he is tired and carries his head too low, the matador can bring it up, temporarily, with the same pass if he modifies it and does not wait for the carriage of the head to fall again before he goes in to kill. The low passes, made with a swing and a sharp twist of the muleta, sometimes a slow-drawing swing and flip of the lower part of the cloth, and the quick chops back and forth, are for bulls that are still too strong on their feet or difficult to fix in one spot. They are made from in front of bulls that will not pass, and the merit of the bullfighter consists in his footwork in never losing his place at the head of the animal, never retreating more than he needs to, and with the movements of his muleta dominating the animal, making him turn sharply on himself, wearing him down quickly, and fixing him in position. A bull that will not pass, that is, charge from a certain distance with sufficient force so that if the man remains still and moves the muleta properly, the bull will pass him entirely, is either a cowardly bull or a bull who has been so used in the fight that he has lost all buoyancy and will no longer attack. A skillful matador can, by a few passes that he forces at close range and is careful to keep suave, not turning the bull too much on himself or twisting his legs, make the cowardly bull believe that the muleta is not a punishment, that he will not be hurt if he charges, and convert the cowardly bull into the semblance of a brave bull by giving him confidence. In the same way, by working delicately and wisely, he can light up the bull that has lost his charging ability and bring him out of his defense and into the offensive again. To do this, a bullfighter must take great chances as the only way to give a bull confidence, to force him to charge when he is on the defensive, and to master him is to work as close to him as you can get, leave him just enough of his own terrain to stand on, as Belmonte puts it, and in provoking the charge from such close range, the bullfighter has no way to avoid being caught if he guesses wrong and no time to prepare his passes. His reflexes must be perfect and he must know bulls. If at the same time he is graceful, you may be sure that grace is an altogether inherent quality and not a pose. You may be able to pose as the horns approach from a distance, but there is no time to pose when you are between them, or shifting back and forth to a little place of safety at the corner of his neck, as by giving him the muleta on one side and then withdrawing it, pricking him with the point of the sword or the muleta stick to make him turn, you wear him down or light him up when he does not want to charge. There is a whole school of bullfighting in which grace is developed until it is the one essential, and the passing of the horn past the man's belly eliminated as far as possible, which was inaugurated and developed by Rafael El Gallo. El Gallo was too great and sensitive an artist to be a complete bullfighter, so he gradually avoided as much as possible those parts of the bullfight which had to do with or were capable of bringing on death, either of the man or the bull, but most especially of the man. In this way, he developed a way of working with the bull in which grace, picturesqueness, and true beauty of movement replaced and avoided the dangerous classicism of the bullfight as he found it. Juan Belmonte took such of Gallo's inventions as he wanted and combined them with the classic style and then developed the two into his own great revolutionary style. Gallo was as much of an inventor as was Belmonte. He had more grace, and if he would have had the cold, passionate wolf courage of Belmonte, there could never have been a greater bullfighter. The nearest you come to that combination was Joselito, his brother, and his only fault was that everything in bullfighting was so easy for him to do that it was difficult for him to give it the emotion that was always supplied by Belmonte's evident physical inferiority, not only to the animal he was facing, but to everyone who was working with him and most of those who were watching him. Watching Joselito was like reading about D'Artagnan when you were a boy. You did not worry about him, finally, because he had too much ability. He was too good, too talented. He had to be killed before the danger ever really showed. Now, the essence of the greatest emotional appeal of bullfighting is the feeling of immortality that the bullfighter feels in the middle of a great faena and that he gives to the spectators. He is performing a work of art and he is playing with death, bringing it closer, closer, closer to himself. A death that you know is in the horns because you have the canvas-covered bodies of the horses on the sand to prove it. He gives the feeling of his immortality, and as you watch it, it becomes yours. Then, when it belongs to both of you, he proves it with the sword. When you have a bullfighter to whom bullfighting is as easy as it was to Joselito, he cannot give the feeling of danger that Belmonte gave. Even if you saw him killed, it would not be you who would be killed. Be more like the death of the gods. Gallo was something entirely different. He was pure spectacle. There was no tragedy in it, but no tragedy could replace it. But it was only good if he did it. His imitators only showed how unsound it all was. One of Gallo's inventions was the Pase de la Muerte, or the Pass of the Dead One. He used this pass to start his faenas, and it has been adopted by most bullfighters as the first pass in almost any faena. It is the one pass in bullfighting that any person who could dominate his nerves enough to see the bull approach could learn to make. Yet it is tremendously effective to see. The matador goes out toward the bull and sights him, standing in profile. The muleta, spread by the sword, held in both hands at the height of his waist, somewhat as a baseball player holds his bat when facing the pitcher. If the bull does not charge, the matador advances two or three strides and again stands still, his feet together, the muleta spread wide. When the bull charges, the man stands still as though he were dead until the bull reaches the muleta, then he raises it slowly and the bull goes by him, usually going up in the air after the muleta so that you see the man standing straight still and the bull going up into the air at an angle, his impetus then carrying him away from the man. It is easy and safe to make because it is usually given in the direction of the natural querencia of the bull, so that he goes by as though going to a fire. And because instead of a small lure of scarlet cloth, as in the natural, on which the man must focus the bull's attention, a great spread like a jib is offered to the bull, and he sees it instead of the man. He is not dominated and controlled. His charge is merely taken advantage of. Gallo, too, was a master of gracious passes made before the bull's horns, passes made with both hands, changing the muleta from one hand to the other, sometimes behind his back. Passes that started as though they were to be naturals, and instead the man spinning around, the muleta wrapping itself around him, and the bull following the spinning loose end of it. Others in which the man turned on himself, getting close to the bull's neck and winding him around him. Passes made kneeling, using both hands on the muleta to swing the bull around in a curve. All passes that needed a great knowledge of the bull's mentality and great confidence to make safely, but that, with that knowledge and confidence, were beautiful to see and very satisfying to Gallo to make, although they were the negation of true bullfighting. Chicuelo is a present-day bullfighter who possesses much of Gallo's repertoire of working before the face of the bull. Vicente Barrera does them all too, but his nervous footwork and his electric speed of execution give no idea of the pure grace of Gallo or the skill of Chicuelo, although Barrera is improving his style and execution greatly. All this flowery work is for bulls that will not pass, or for the second part of a faena, or for the matador to show his domination of a bull and his inventive grace. To work only at the head of a bull that will pass, no matter how effectively, gracefully, or with what invention it is done, is to deprive the spectators of the real part of bullfighting. The man deliberately passing the bull's horns as close and as slowly as he can past his own body, and to substitute a series of graceful tricks, valuable as ornaments to a faena, for the sincere danger of the faena itself. The present-day bullfighter, who dominates the bulls most completely with his muleta, who masters them quickest, whether they are brave or cowardly, and then executes most often all the classic and dangerous passes, the natural with the left hand and the passe de pecho, which are the base of sincere bullfighting, and yet is excellent in the picturesque and graceful work before the bull's horns, is Marcial Alanda. At the start of his career, his style was faulty. He twisted and corkscrewed with the cape, and his naturals were not at all natural, but forced, made very much on the bias, and affected-looking. He has steadily improved his style until it is now excellent with the muleta. He has become much more robust in health, and with his great knowledge of bulls and his very great intelligence, he can give an adequate and interesting performance with any bull that comes out of the toril. He has lost most of the apathy that was his first characteristic. He has been gored severely 3 times, and it has given him more rather than less courage. And his seasons of 1929, 1930, and 1931 were those of a great bullfighter. Manuel Jimenez, Chicuelo, and Antonio Marquez are each capable of giving a complete, pure, and classical faena with the muleta when the bull is without difficulty and the man able to conquer his nerves. Felix Rodriguez and Manolo Bienvenida are both masters with the muleta, able to reduce a difficult bull and profit by the candor and bravery of an easy bull. But Rodriguez had not been well, and Bienvenida, as I explained in another chapter, should not really be judged until his ability to dominate his nerves and reflexes after his first serious wounding has been proven. Vicente Barrera is an able dominator of bulls with a tricky style in all of the passes in which the bull goes completely by the man. But he is steadily improving his way of working, and he may, if he keeps on, become a very satisfactory performer. He has in him the ability to be a great bullfighter. He has talent, a natural sense of bullfighting and ability to see the fight as a whole, extraordinary reflexes, and a good physique. But he had for a long time such an overwhelming conceit that it was easier for him to subsidize a press to praise his defects than it was for him to face those defects and correct them. He is at best in the picturesque work at the face of the bull, and especially in one particular ayudado por bajo in which he imitates Joselito, where the sword and muleta are held together, pointed straight down, and the man turns the bull with a slightly ridiculous but delicate lifting motion, as though he were, with extended hands together, stirring a great kettle of soup with a furled umbrella. Joaquin Rodriguez, called Cagancho, is a gypsy who is the inheritor of Gallo as far as grace, picturesqueness, and panics go, but in no sense inherits Gallo's great knowledge of bulls and of the principles of bullfighting. Cagancho has statuesque grace, majestic slowness, and suavity of movement, but faced by a bull which will not allow him to put his feet together and prepare his passes, he shows he has no resources. And if the bull deviates at all from mechanical perfection, the gypsy becomes panic-stricken and will get no closer to the animal than the tip of his muleta held at the greatest distance possible from his body. He is a bullfighter who, if you should happen to see him with the bull he has confidence in, could give you an afternoon you would not forget. But you might see him 7 successive times and have him act in a way that would disgust you thoroughly with bullfighting. Francisco Vega de los Reyes, called Gitanillo de Triana, is a cousin of Cagancho who can be very good with the cape, and while he lacks Cagancho's grace with the muleta, is much more able and courageous with it, although his work is fundamentally unsound. While he is doing a faena, he seems unable to get rid of the bull properly, to send him far enough with each pass so that as he turns, he does not cut back in too quickly, and so is constantly getting the bull on top of him when he wants him least, and has been gored many times through his own awkwardness. Like Chicuelo and Marquez, he is not well nor strong. And while there is no reason for the public to excuse a highly paid performer on the grounds of his health, since there is no law which requires him to fight bulls unless he is in condition to do so, yet the physical condition of a bullfighter is one of the things that must be taken into account in judging his work critically, even though he has no right to evoke it as excuse to the paying spectator. Gitanillo de Triana is cheerfully brave and naturally honorable in the ring, but the confident unsoundness of his technique gives you a feeling that he may be gored at any time while you are watching him. Since writing that about Gitanillo de Triana, I saw him destroyed by a bull in Madrid on Sunday afternoon, May 31, 1931. It had been over a year since I had seen him fight, and on the way to the ring in a taxi, I wondered if he would be changed, and how much I should have to revise what I had written about him. He came out in the paseo with long-legged, easy swing, dark-faced, better-looking than he had been before, and smiling at everyone he recognized as he came up to the barrera to change capes. He looked healthy, his skin clear tobacco brown, his hair, that had been discolored by the peroxide they had used to soak out the clotted blood after a motor car accident in which he had been severely hurt in the last year I had seen him, was ebony black again and shining. And he wore a silver bullfighting suit to emphasize all this black and brown, and seemed very pleased with things. With the cape he was confident, managing it beautifully and slowly, the style of Belmonte, except that it was being done by a long-legged, thin-hipped, dark gypsy. His first bull was the third of the afternoon, and after being very good with the cape, he watched the banderillas placed. Then, before he went out with sword and muleta, he motioned to the banderilleros to bring the bull closer into the barrera. "Watch him. He hooks a little to the left," said his sword handler as he handed him the sword and cloth. "Let him hook as he wants. I can handle him." Gitanillo drew the sword out of the leather sheath that went limp as the stiffness was gone and strode long-legging toward the bull. He let him come once and go by for the Pase de la Muerte. The bull turned very quickly, and Gitanillo turned with the muleta to let him come by on the left, raised the muleta, and then rose himself into the air, his legs wide spread, his hand still holding the muleta, his head down, the bull's left horn in his thigh. The bull turned him on the horn and threw him against the barrera. The bull's horn found him, picked him up once more, and threw him against the wood again. Then as he lay there, the bull drove the horn through his back. All of this did not take 3 seconds, and from the instant the bull first lifted him, Marcial Lalanda was running toward him with the cape. The other bullfighters had their capes widespread, flopping them at the bull. Marcial went in at the bull's head, shoving his knee into the bull's muzzle, slapping him across the face to make him leave the man and come out in a rush. Marcial running out into the ring backwards, the bull following the cape. Gitanillo tried to get to his feet, but couldn't. The bullring servants picked him up and ran with him, his head swaying toward the infirmary. A banderillero had been gored by the first bull, and the doctor still had him on the operating table when they came in with Gitanillo. He saw there was no tremendous hemorrhage, the femoral artery had not been severed, finished with the banderillero, and then went to work. There was a horn wound in each thigh, and in each wound the quadriceps and abductor muscles had been torn loose. But in the wound in the back, the horn had driven clean through the pelvis and had torn the sciatic nerve and pulled it out by the root as a worm may be pulled out of the damp lawn by a robin. When his father came to see him, Gitanillo said, "Don't cry, little papa. You remember how bad the automobile thing was, and they all said we wouldn't get over it? This is going to be the same way." Later he said, "I know I can't drink, but tell them to moisten my mouth. Just moisten my mouth a little." Those people who say they would pay to go to a bullfight if they could see the man gored, not just always the bulls killed by the men, should have been at the ring, in the infirmary, and later in the hospital. Gitanillo lived through the heat of June and July and the first 2 weeks of August, dying finally then of meningitis from the wound at the base of the spine. He weighed 128 pounds when he was gored, and he weighed 63 pounds when he died, and during the summer suffered 3 different ruptures of the femoral artery, weakened by ulcers from the drainage tubes in his thigh wound and rupturing when he coughed. While he was in the hospital, Felix Rodriguez and Valencia Segundo came in with almost identical thigh wounds and were both discharged as able to fight, although their wounds were still open, before Gitanillo died. Gitanillo's bad luck was that the bull threw him against the base of the wooden fence so that he was against something solid when the horn made that chop at his back. Had he been lying on the sand in the open ring, the same horn stroke that wounded him fatally would probably have thrown him into the air rather than driven through his pelvis. The people who say they would pay to see a bullfighter killed would have had their money's worth when Gitanillo became delirious in the hot weather with the nerve pain. You could hear him in the street. It seemed a crime to keep him alive, and he would have been much luckier to have died soon after the fight while he still had control of himself and still possessed his courage, rather than to have gone through the progressive horror of physical and spiritual humiliation that the long enough continued bearing of unbearable pain produces. To watch and to hear a human being in this time should, I suppose, make one more considerate about the horses, the bulls, and other animals. But there is a quick pull forward on a horse's ears to tighten the skin over the vertebrae at the base of the skull, and an easy stroke by the puntilla between the vertebrae that solves all a horse's problems and drops him dead without a twitch. The bull gets death within 15 minutes of when the man starts to play him, and all wounds he receives are in hot blood. And if they do not hurt any more than the wounds a man receives in hot blood, they cannot hurt much. But as long as man is regarded as having an immortal soul, and doctors will keep him alive through times when death would seem the greatest gift one man could give another, then the horses and the bulls will seem well taken care of, and man to run the greatest risk. Heriberto Garcia and Fermin Espinosa, Armillita Chico, are two Mexicans who are complete and capable artists with the muleta. Heriberto Garcia can equal the very best, and his work does not have the cold Indian quality that takes away emotion from most Mexicans' work in the bullring. Armillita is cold, a brown little chinless Indian with an odd collection of teeth, a beautiful build for a fighter, more length in legs than torso, and is one of the really great artists with the muleta. Nicanor Villalta, when he has a bull that charges straight enough so that the matador can put his feet together, works closer to the bull, becomes more exalted, more excited, curving on himself so he thrusts his waistline at the horns, and with his amazing wrist controlling the muleta, brings the bull around him in circles again and again, passes him so close before his chest that the bull's shoulder sometimes jostles him, and the horn so close to his belly that you can see welts on his abdomen afterwards at the hotel. No exaggeration, I've seen the welts. But I thought they might have come from the shafts of the banderillas that struck him as he passed the bulk of the bull by him so close that it covered his shirt from blood. But they might have come from the flat of the horns. The horns were so close I did not want to watch them too closely. When he does a great faena, it is all valor. Valor and that magic wrist. And it makes you put up with the greatest awkwardness you could see on all bulls which will not allow him to get his feet together. You may see a great faena of Bialta's in Madrid. He has drawn more good bulls there than any matador who has ever lived. You are certain to see him as awkward-looking as a praying mantis any time he draws a difficult bull. But remember that his awkwardness is caused by his physical structure, not cowardliness. Because of the way he is built, he can only be graceful if he can put his feet together. And where awkwardness on the part of a naturally graceful bullfighter is a sign of panic, in Bialta it only means that he has drawn a bull which he must spread his legs apart to work with. But if you can ever see him when he can put his feet together, see him bend like a tree in a storm before the bull's charge, see him wind the bull around him again and again and again, see him get so excited that he will kneel in front of the bull after he has dominated him and bite the horn, then you will forgive him the neck God gave him, the muleta the size of a bedsheet that he uses, and his telephone pole legs, because his strange mixture of a body contains enough valor and pundonor to make a dozen bullfighters. Cayetano Ordóñez, Niño de la Palma, could manage the muleta perfectly with either hand, was a beautiful performer with a great artistic and dramatic sense of a faena, but he was never the same after he found the bulls carried terms in the hospital inevitable, and death, perhaps, in their horns, as well as 5,000 peseta notes between their withers. He wanted the notes, but he was unwilling to approach the horns to get them when he found the forfeit that was collectible from their points. Courage comes such a short distance, from the heart to the head. But when it goes, no one knows how far away it goes, in a hemorrhage, perhaps, or into a woman. And it is a bad thing to be in bullfighting business when it is gone, no matter where it went. Sometimes you'd get it back from another wound. The first may bring fear of death, and the second may take it away. And sometimes one woman takes it away, and another gives it back. Bullfighters stay in the business relying on their knowledge and their ability to limit the danger and hope the courage will come back, and sometimes it does, and most times it does not. Neither Enrique Torres nor Victoriano Roger Valencia II has any real ability with the muleta, and it is that which limits them in their profession, for they are both at their best fine artists with the cape. Luis Fuentes Bejarano and Diego Mascaran Fortuna are two bullfighters, very brave, very sound in their knowledge of their profession, able to reduce difficult bulls and give competent performance with any, but with heavy, undistinguished styles. Fortuna's is more old-fashioned than Bejarano's, whose style is simply bad modern tricks, but they are alike in their bravery, their competence, their very good luck, and their lack of genius. They are matadors to see with ordinary or difficult bulls. Where the stylists would attempt nothing, they will give you a competent bullfight with all the cheap thrills and theatricalisms intermixed with one or two moments of true emotion. Of the three best killers in bullfighting, Antonio de la Haba, Zurito, Martin Aguero, and Manolo Martinez, only Martinez can give a semblance of a faena with the muleta, and his success, when he has it, is entirely due to his courage and the chances he takes, rather than any true ability in managing the surge. Of the 34 other full matadors in active service, only a few are worth mentioning. One, Andres Merida from Malaga, is a tall, thin, vacant-faced gypsy who is a genius with cape and muleta, and is the only bullfighter I have ever seen who had a completely absent-minded air in the ring, as though he were thinking of something very distant and very different. He is liable to attacks of fear so complete that there is no word for them. But if he becomes confident with the bull, he can be wonderful. Of the three real gypsies, Gagancho, Gitanillo de Triana, and Merida, I like Merida the best. He has the grace of the others with an added grotesque which, with his absent-mindedness, makes him, for me, the most appealing of all the gypsies after Gallo. Gagancho is, of all of them, the most talented. Gitanillo de Triana, the bravest and most honorable. Last summer I heard from several people from Malaga that Merida was not really a gypsy. If this is true, he is even better as an imitation than a real one. Saturio Toron is an excellent banderiero, very valiant, with the worst, most ignorant, most dangerous manner of working as a matador that I have ever seen. After being a banderiero, he took the sword as an apprentice bullfighter in 1929. And he had an excellent season, forcing success through valor and good luck. He was made a formal matador in 1930 by Marcial Alanda at Pamplona, and was severely gored in his first three fights. If his taste improves, he can possibly rid himself of some of his small-town vulgarities of style and learn to fight bulls, but from what I saw of him in 1931, his case looked hopeless, and I can only hope the bulls do not destroy him. In this list of those who started as though they might be good matadors and end in varying degrees of failure and tragedy, the two great causes of failure, eliminating bad luck, are lack of artistic ability, which of course cannot be overcome by valor, and fear. The two really brave matadors who have nevertheless failed to hold any place because of the shortness of their repertoires are Bernard Muñoz, Canecerito, and Antonio de la Aba, Zurito. Another who is really brave and has more of a repertoire than Canecerito and Zurito, and may amount to something, although handicapped by a lack of stature, is Julio García, Palmeno. Besides Domingo Ortega, whom I have written about in another place in this book, the new matadors of any reputation include José Amoros, who has a peculiar rubbery style, seeming to stretch away from the bull as though he were made of elastic bands, and is completely second-rate, except, of course, in his unique rubberiness. José González, called Canecerito of Mexico, a Mexican Indian belonging to the gutful wonder school who eats them alive, and while very brave, a good banderillero, and a capable and very emotional performer, will not be with us very long if he takes the same chances with the real bulls that he does with the young ones. And since he has accustomed his public to such strong sensations, will almost certainly cease to interest if he stops taking these chances. And most promising of all the new fighters, Jesús Sorozano. Jesús, called Chucho, in case you don't know the diminutive for that Christian name, is a non-Indian Mexican who is a perfect bullfighter, brave, artistic, intelligent, and dominating every department of his art completely, except the very minor one of administering the descabello, or coup de grace, and yet is completely without personality. This lack of personality is difficult to analyze, but so far it seems to consist of a sort of apologetic, slinking, faulty, humpbacked way of carrying himself when he is not directly involved with the bull. Bullfighters say that fear of a bull takes the type away from a bullfighter. That is, if he is arrogant and bossy, or easy and graceful, fear removes these characteristics. But Sorozano seems to have no type to lose. Yet, when he is working with a bull that he is confident with, he is perfect in everything he does, and he placed the finest pair of banderillas, walking slowly, foot by foot toward the bull in the style of Gaona, did the best and slowest work with the cape, and the closest and most emotional faena with the muleta that I saw in all the season of 1931. The negative part of his work is that he performs beautifully with the bull, and then as soon as he steps away from the animal, lapses into that humpbacked, frozen-faced apathy. But personality or not, he is a wonderful bullfighter with knowledge and great art and valor. Two other new matadors are José Mejías, called Pepe Bienvenida, the younger brother of Manolo, who is braver and more excitable than his elder brother, has a varied and picturesque repertoire, and a very attractive personality, but is lacking in Manolo's artistic ability and knowledge of how to dominate bulls safely, although this may come with time. And David Lithiaga, a young Mexican fighter who is enormously skillful with the muleta and without style or ability with the cape, and, oddly enough for a Mexican, mediocre with the banderillas. I write this about Lithiaga without having seen him, on the reports of those people whose opinion I trust who have watched him work. He fought only twice in Madrid in 1931, once as a novillero on the day I went out to Aranjuez to see Ortega, and again in October to be made a full matador after I had left Spain. But he is very popular in Mexico City, and anyone who wants to check up on him will probably be able to see him in Mexico during the winter. I have omitted all phenomenons from this listing, rating no one who has not proved his right to be judged. There are always new phenomenons in bullfighting. There will be newer ones by the time this book comes out. Watered by publicity, they sprout each season on the strength of one good afternoon in Madrid with a bull that was kind to them. But the Morning Glory is a floral monument of lasting endurance compared to these one-triumph bullfighters. 5 years from now, eating only occasionally, but keeping their one suit neat to wear to the café, you will be able to hear them tell how, on their presentation in Madrid, they were better than Belmonte. It may be true, too. And how were you the last time, you ask? I had a little bad luck killing, just a little bad luck, the ex-phenomenon says, and you say, that's a shame. A man can't have luck killing them all. And in your mind, you see the phenomenon, sweating, white-faced, and sick with fear, unable to look at the horn or go near it. A couple of swords on the ground, capes all around him, running in at an angle on the bull, hoping the sword will strike a vital spot. Cushions sailing down into the ring, and the steers ready to come in. Just a little bad luck killing. That was 2 years ago, and he hasn't fought since, except in bed at night when he wakes up wet with sweat and fear, and he will not fight again unless hunger makes him, and then, because everyone knows he is a coward and worthless, he may have to take some bulls that no one else will take, and if he nerves himself up to do something, since he is out of training, the bulls may kill him. Or else he may have just a little bad luck killing again. There are 760-some unsuccessful bullfighters still attempting to practice their art in Spain. The skillful ones, unsuccessful through fear, and the brave ones through lack of talent. You sometimes see the brave ones killed if you are unlucky. In the summer of 1931, I saw a fight with very big, very fast 5-year-old bulls and 3 apprentice matadors. The oldest in point of service was Alfonso Gómez, called Finito de Valladolid, well over 35, once handsome, a failure in his profession, yet very dignified, intelligent, and brave, who had been fighting in Madrid 10 years without ever interesting the public enough to justify a move from novillero to full matador. Next oldest in service was Isidoro Todo, called Alcalareno Segundo, 37 years old, only a little over 5 feet tall, a chunky, cheerful little man who supported 4 children, his widowed sister, and the woman he lived with on the little money he made from the bulls. All he had as a bullfighter was great bravery and the fact that he was so short that this defect, which made it impossible for him to succeed as a matador, made him an attraction as a curiosity in the ring. The third fighter was Miguel Casillas, a complete coward. But it is a dull and ugly story, and the only thing to remember was the way Alcalareno Segundo was killed, and that was too ugly, I see now, to justify writing about when it is not necessary. I made the mistake of telling my son about it. When I came home from the ring, he wanted to know all about the fight and just what had happened, and like a fool, I told him what I'd seen. He did not say anything except to ask if he had not been killed because he was so small. He himself was small. I said yes, he was small, but also he had not known how to cross with the muleta. I hadn't said he was killed, only hurt. I'd had that much sense, although it was not much. Then somebody came in the room, Sidney Franklin, I think it was, and said in Spanish, "He's dead." "You didn't say he was dead," the boy said. "I didn't know for sure." "I don't like it that he's dead," the boy said. The next day, he said, "I can't stop thinking about that man who was killed because he was so small." "Don't think about it," I said, wishing for the 1,000th time in my life that I could wipe out words that I'd said. "It's silly to think about that." "I don't try to think about it, but I wish you hadn't told me because every time I shut my eyes, I see it." "Think about Pinky," I said. Pinky is a horse in Wyoming. So we were very careful about death for a while. My eyes were too bad to read, and my wife was reading Dashiell Hammett's bloodiest to date, The Dane Curse, out loud, and every time that Mr. Hammett would kill a character or a set of characters, she would substitute the word umpty-umped for the words killed, cut the throat of, blew the brains out of, spattered around the room, and so on. And soon the comic of umpty-umped so appealed to the boy that when he said, "You know the one who was umpty-umped because he was so small? I don't think about him now," I knew it was all right. There have been 4 new matadors promoted in 1932, 2 of whom deserve mention as possibilities, 1 as a curiosity, and 1 could probably be omitted as a phenomenon. The 2 possibilities are Juanito Martín Caro, called Chiquito de la Audiencia, and Luis Gómez, called El Estudiante. Chiquito, at 20, has been fighting young bulls as a child prodigy since he was 12. Elegant in style, very graceful, sound, intelligent, and competent, He has the pretty, pretty look of a young girl. But in the ring, he is domineering and serious and has nothing effeminate about him except his girl's face, and certainly none of the feeble whipped look of Chicuelo. His drawback is that his work, while intelligent and beautiful, is cold and passionless. He has been fighting so long that he seems to have the caution and protective resources of a matador at the end of his career, rather than to be a boy who must risk everything to arrive. But he has great artistic ability and intelligence, and his career will be very interesting to follow. Luis Gomez, El Estudiante, is a young medical student with a keen, brown, good-looking face and a good figure that might serve as a model for a formalized young matador type, who possesses a good sound classic modern style with cape and muleta and kills quickly and well. After 3 seasons of fighting in the provinces in the summer and studying medicine in Madrid in the winter, he made his debut last fall in Madrid as a novillero and had a great success. He became a full matador at Valencia in the Corridas of San José in March of 1932, and according to aficionados, whom I trust, he was very good and showed great promise, although occasionally with the muleta, his valor and his desire to make a faena led him into compromising situations which he was unconscious of, and from which he was saved only by luck and good reflexes. On the surface, it seemed he dominated the bulls, but in reality, luck saved him more than once. But with intelligence, valor, and a good style, he is a legitimate hope as a matador if his luck holds during his first full campaign. Alfredo Corrochano, son of Gregorio Corrochano, the very influential bullfight critic of the Madrid monarchist daily ABC, is a matador made to order by his father under the influence of Ignacio Sanchez Mejías, the brother-in-law of Joselito, whom Corrochano attacked so bitterly and virulently during the season that saw his death. Alfredo is a dark, slight, contemptuous, and arrogant boy with a rather bubonic face, a little like that of Alfonso XIII as a child. He was educated in Switzerland and trained as a matador at the testings of the calves and brood stock of the bull ranches around Madrid and Salamanca by Sanchez Mejías, his father, and all those who toadied to his father. For about 3 years, he has fought as a professional, first with Bienvenida Boys as a child performer, then last year as a full novillero. Due to his father's position, his presentation in Madrid aroused much feeling, and he was made to feel the bitterness of all the enemies his father's often excellent and extremely well-written sarcasms had made, as well as those who hated him as the son of the middle-class royalist and believed he was depriving boys who needed bread to eat of the chance to earn it in the ring. At the same time, he profited by the publicity and curiosity all this feeling aroused, and through his 3 appearances as a novillero in Madrid, he bore himself insolently, arrogantly, and very much like a man. He showed he was a good banderillero, an excellent dominator with the muleta, with much intelligence and vista in handling of the bull, but with a lamentably bad style with the cape and an utter inability to kill properly or even decently. In 1932, he took the alternative in Castellón de la Plana in the first corrida of the year, and according to my informants, he was not changed since I had seen him, except that he was trying to remedy his vulgar way of making the Veronica by substituting various picturesque tricks with the cape for that one irreplaceable test of a fighter's serenity and artistic ability. As a curiosity, his career will be extremely interesting, but I believe that unless he acquires security in killing, he will soon cease to interest the public once his novelty as a son of his father has been thoroughly exploited. Victoriana de la Serna was a young noviero who had that necessity for a production of a phenomenon, a great afternoon in Madrid, in September of 1931. He was taken up, exploited, shown near Madrid with hand-picked small bulls where a disaster could be minimized and a triumph made much of by the Madrid critics paid to attend. Then at the very end of the season, he was presented for his second Madrid appearance as a full matador. He showed that the elevation was premature, that he was green, insufficiently grounded in his profession, and needed much more seasoning and experience before being able to handle the mature bulls securely. This season he has a certain amount of contracts signed last year before his failure in Madrid, but in spite of his undoubtedly phenomenal natural ability, his too early elevation to a matador would seem to have started him on the quick descent to oblivion, well greased as it is by all those other phenomenons who have slid along it before him. As always, I hope for the performer, who is less guilty than his exploiters, that I am wrong and that he may miraculously learn his trade while practicing it as a master. But it is such a defrauding of the public to do so that even when a matador does so learn his craft, the public rarely forgives him, and when he is secure enough to satisfy them, they have no wish to see him.